After 10 years of producing our weekly radio show, we thought it was finally time to podcast full episodes. While this podcast is free for all of you, it comes at a significant cost to us. Please consider making a small gift to keep us broadcasting loud and clear at fromthetop.org.
It's NPR's From the Top, the showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country celebrating 10 years on the air. Today, from the Winspear Opera House at the AT&T Performing Arts Center in Dallas, Texas, our lineup of outstanding performers includes a 14-year-old violist from here in Dallas performing Schubert's Arpeggione Sonata, and a teenage pianist who has a beautiful story to tell about one very generous piano teacher. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston. Here's our host, one of America's great concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thanks very much, and welcome, everybody. One of the greatest new opera houses in America has just opened, and ladies and gentlemen, we are in it. It's the glorious Winspear Opera House at the AT&T Performing Arts Center. What an honor to be included in this hall's premiere season. Thank you. And there's nothing like that new opera house smell. We're going to make some joyful noise in this great room today. In addition to the fantastic performers Joanne already mentioned, one of the nation's top young percussion ensembles joins us in the second half of the program. They're a rowdy, rambunctious bunch of teenagers from Chicago, and if you listen closely, you can probably hear them goofing around in their dressing room right now. But they are a disciplined musical force to be reckoned with, I assure you. Our opening violinist is also a major force, and in the spirit of helping us to open this new opera house, she's brought us a wild showpiece for the violin. Please welcome, from Bloomington, Indiana, 15-year-old violinist Jenny Lee. Jenny, tell everybody what we're going to play together.
We'll be playing Vinyasky's Scherzo or Tarantella.
I like the imaginative image you have for this piece. Tell us that, too.
While I play this piece, I actually picture a guy getting chased by a really gross bug, and then at the end, he ends up crushing it and the bug dies.
Well, that's particularly appropriate, as the tarantella is sort of named for the tarantula. It's a crazed dance that one should use to dispel the poison in a tarantula's bite. So I guess we gotta keep dancing until we crush that bug, huh?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's take it from the top. Thank you.
Jenny Lee, 15 years old, from Bloomington, Indiana. She studies at the Starling Preparatory String Project in Cincinnati. So that's how it goes. Seriously, there's that place towards the very end which is sort of syncopated, and I always feel like, oh, well, you know, I should have practiced it more. I never can figure out what the rhythm is. There's such an infectious and totally invested sense of rhythm the way you do it, and it makes no question whatsoever what's supposed to be going on. Just spectacular performance. Really appreciate that, Jenny. Jenny, I want to ask you, given your parents, how on earth did you come to the violin?
Well, actually, my mom, I'm like in a music family, so my mom is a piano professor, and my dad is also a voice professor in Korea. And first of all, they didn't think that I would have any talent in singing, so they didn't want me to go to singing. And then my mom was all like, hey, maybe piano? And she was like, nah, I know what I went through, and I don't want you to go through the same thing, so she chose violin for me.
And you said your dad is back in Korea teaching.
Yes, he is.
You've been here in the States since when?
I was 9 years old when I first moved here.
And going to Bloomington, you know, right in the middle of the heartland there. At this point, you've been here for a few years. Do you feel more Americanized or still very Asian-centered at this point?
Well, I think I'm sort of in between nowadays. And my friends, they make fun of me because I'm not quite that as smart as all the other kids who are Asian. And, you know, they're not like, why aren't you an AP calculus? You're supposed to be really smart. And they're being all really stereotypical. But then again, my friends, they also really, you know, they just do it for fun, and they know that I don't take it as, you know, offensive and too hard. And
I'm wondering about that, you know, because it's like, gosh, making those sort of stereotypical, you know, things. Oh, well, you have to be good at math, and well, you know, does the teasing bother you, or do you play into it?
I definitely play into it. I'm just having a good time with my friends, yeah. And they know that they don't actually mean it. And
so, Jenny, what'd you have for dinner last night?
I'll be like rice.
Boy. I mean, so you don't quite fit the Asian stereotype, but you don't fit the classical music stereotype either. I mean, are you a maniacal practicer?
To be quite honest, I really don't like practicing. I only actually probably do it because I have to, and if I don't do it, then I'll probably feel really guilty. So I practice.
You sound more Catholic than Asian. And I guess you haven't fit the stereotype of a young teenage girl either. You're sort of a tomboy a little bit, yeah? Or used to be?
Well, I used to be. When I was in, like, second grade, I used to fool around with all the guys in my class, and we would arm wrestle, and then I would beat everyone, and they'd be so intimidated by me, and then just go to random teachers even and just ask them to arm wrestle me, and then I would, they'd be surprised. And there are stories where my mom got called into the school because I bit this guy's finger and it started bleeding, and
wow,
it was just bad. But now I'm trying to be more feminine these days.
Well, you're a beautiful young lady, but I will not challenge you to arm wrestling. I don't want to have my finger bitten.
I'll probably beat you.
But, at least we got the preemptive tarantella out of the way in case there's any venom left in you.
Definitely.
And didn't leave any venom left over after that performance, I hope. That was spectacular again, Jenny.
Thanks
for being with us.
Thanks.
Keep it up. Jenny Lee, 15 years old from Bloomington, Indiana.
From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need, on the web at jkcf.org. Go to our website to listen to any episode of From the Top from our past 10 years and learn more about how we're celebrating our 10th anniversary season. That's fromthetop.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Well, if Jenny set the tone of today's show with her fiery first piece, our next performer, Sahun Hong, is only going to intensify the atmosphere. He's 15 years old from neighboring Fort Worth, Texas, the first of two Texans we're featuring next. Sam, I take it you go by Sam.
Perfect. Absolutely.
Sam, you am then. All right. What is your finger buster of choice today?
I'll be playing Liszt, Hungarian Rhapsody number 11 in A minor.
Great. Looking forward to it. The stage is yours.
Thank you.
Sahun Hong, 15 years old, our pianist from Fort Worth, Texas, playing the 11th Hungarian Rhapsody of Franz Liszt. Sam, that was brilliant and buoyant at the same time.
Oh, thank you.
It had a very dance-like quality, and actually we're going to be talking a little bit about that in a moment. But first, you have one of the most amazing connections with your teacher I've ever heard about. Tell us.
Well, when I first started studying with my teacher that was in third or fourth grade here in Fort Worth, Texas, we really got along. Everything was great. Then my family moved to Orange County, California. And there were some issues there. I couldn't really find a good piano teacher. Also, I missed my Mr. Owings, previous teacher. Mm-hmm. And then one day I found out that my parents and my teacher had been emailing each other about having me come live with them, the teachers.
Wow.
I didn't realize it was that big of a deal at that time. I just thought, oh, well, I'll just go live with my teacher. I don't have to deal with my parents anymore.
I had a similar situation. My parents moved to Pittsburgh from Chicago midway through my high school years, and I was very attached to my band. I had a band at that point, and I actually was living for a while with my drummer's parents. That was not nearly the kind of important life decision that being with your major mentor and teacher is, but it is something, obviously you go with what you need at that point.
Well, you have to do what you have to do.
Yeah, exactly. So, of course, your teacher and legal guardian now, John
yes.
Owings, is in the audience along with his wife, also wonderful piano teacher, Cordelia. John, what did you see in Sam that led you and Cordelia to make such a commitment to him?
Well, when I started teaching Sam, he was 8 years old, and I taught really only college students at TCU. And, by the time you get to college, you're pretty settled down, and you come in for the lesson, it's almost routine, you know what to expect. But when Sam would come in for his lesson, he would just come bursting in, literally bouncing off the walls, and just couldn't wait to play. And, what was apparent to me from the first time I heard him, that this was not just a kid who had been well taught to play the piano and had talent, but he had that special quality, that inner spark, that's something that you really can't teach. And that's just this tremendous connection with music that just resonated from inside. So Cordelia and I thought this was the right thing to do.
So Sam, your insatiable curiosity and thirst for knowledge of the piano, obviously a very inspiring thing for a teacher. But now go ahead and embarrass John a little bit. What was it about John's playing and his teaching that
compelled you? You've heard the sweet talk. Now you're going to hear down and dirty, yes.
Okay, all right.
It just makes me cry every time he plays one of my pieces because I think, how am I ever going to get there? But, the first time I heard him, it's just his sound is amazing. I think the thing that really struck me as just phenomenal was especially his voicing and his tone. Mm-hmm. Otherworldly. The thing about living with your piano teacher is that you're bound to get some conflict. When you're practicing, from the second floor, I'll hear slow practice, metronome, hands separately, no. But I really do appreciate it, and it helps to have a nice constant reminder that doesn't shut off when you press the button.
Yeah, that's right. So they're constantly hounding you about the practicing under tempo.
Definitely.
And with the metronome, and this must anger you some. What happens? Are there any discipline problems in the home? Do they threaten you with any kind of reprisals?
It's gonna be tough. Okay, well. When I don't clean my room, they threaten me with ballet. This is true.
to take you to the ballet?
To take me to ballet. This kind of fear is especially compounded because I took about a two-week, just a very heavy ballet class, 6 hours a day.
Oh, so ballet class, they wanted you to dance. So this brings up what I was talking about with your list, because it has a sort of a dance-like quality.
Yes.
So they probably thought this was a very good idea.
They thought it was a very good idea.
Yeah. And So, I'm sorry, it was a two week, how many hours a day?
6 hours a day of straight up.
So, ballet, you didn't take to the ballet, but I seriously, Sahun, I find your playing, you know, so buoyant, and the sense that we have, you know, trying to get this sort of heaviness out of the piano, and particularly in a virtuoso piece like this, and to have the kind of lithe strength that you have is definitely somebody who can be in third position for 6 hours a day. I think you shouldn't give it up entirely. At least the spirit of the dance. The spirit of the dance, because it's in your playing already, as well as this fantastic inspiration you give your teacher and your thirst for knowledge. And we wish you all the best.
Well, thank you very much.
It's got great things from you. Sahun Hong, 15 years old, our pianist from Fort Worth, Texas. Okay, so we've had two pretty brilliant showpieces so far on today's show. I think it's time to bring things into more of an intimate setting with one of the most beautiful and mellow-sounding pieces written for the viola. To play this piece, please welcome a 14-year-old from here in Dallas and a recipient of one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artist Awards, Isabella Markham. Is it okay? May I call you Bella?
Yes.
Is it all right?
Yeah.
Bella, this is, I'm happy to say, one of your favorite pieces. I know it's one of mine. While I head back over to the piano, tell everybody what we're going to play and why you like it so much.
We're going to play the Schubert Arpeggioni Sonata for viola and piano. And I especially love this piece, and I was praying that you guys would pick this piece because this piece has such a wide range of emotion, and I love portraying it to other people.
Great piece. Let's do it. Thank you. Isabella Markham, 14-year-old violist from here in Dallas, playing the Arpeggioni Sonata. Play that so beautifully. You really do inhabit that piece. There's such a simplicity about it musically, but as you say, there's such depth of character in every moment, and I just hear you and feel you loving this music so
Thank
deeply.
You.
It's such a pleasure playing it with you. You were telling me that, you're in your freshman year in high school. That's a big improvement.
It is.
What's so great about high school as opposed to junior high?
For one thing, high school is a heck of a lot better than junior high because, you know, there's more people and, you know, you can make more friends and it's a great experience.
Well, so who are your friends? I mean, are you with the emo kids? Are you with the cheerleaders?
Yeah, sure. Anybody.
Anybody?
Yeah.
How about the music geeks?
Sure.
The band geeks?
Yeah.
The football players?
Yeah, a few of them, yeah.
That's great. You can get along with everybody.
Yep.
But you're not just fitting in with them. I mean,
you're
really kind of an individual. You have your own style.
Yes.
What sets you apart?
Well, first off, my friends make fun of me because I'm always dressing differently than they are, not the generic, you know, brand names and stuff. So that's how I dress. And my personality, I guess. I mean, I don't, you know, I just have a different personality.
Here's another way you demonstrate your incredible individuality. You're a very original and talented visual artist. It's fantastic stuff, actually. You've actually sold things to friends and family, and you know,
they insisted
on buying it. I mean, you were just going to give it away, and you know, they said, "Oh no, this is really."
It was kind of just sitting on the shelf, and they go, "Oh, I like it," so they bought it. I guess so.
I'm very pleased to say, Bella's fantastic artwork is able to be viewed. We have a little exhibition up at fromthetop.org, so I'm going to encourage everybody to come by. We'll sell some more paintings for you. now, Bella, you are dealing with ADD in a very serious way. Talk a little bit about that. It's been some hard times.
I have ADD, and it took a lot to overcome. You know, I did therapy, and my family has supported me the whole way, and it's really helped me out.
So there were moments where you couldn't understand things that were going on in school, but then, and there were other times that there were insomnia sort of periods. So was that hard emotionally for you?
It was, but, you know, I just had to get through it, and it made me stronger, so.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's one reason, I know from speaking to you and reading about you a little bit, that you're very tuned into people with real mental challenges.
Yes,
and,
I am.
And how other people deal with them.
Don't yeah, because someone very close to me actually has Asperger's, and I even know some people at school who have it too, and just seeing them being bullied and, you know, other kids making fun of them, and, you know, it just really hurts me when I see that, because it's just terrible to watch.
Well, it's sort of a defensive and really sort of... born of ignorance more than and fear more than anything else. You've also done a lot of playing at nursing homes and such, and do you find that there's insensitivity there towards the aged?
Well, I really like playing for the elderly because it's just something that I feel that they're kind of like put out in the shadow, and you know, they don't really always get to hear young musicians. And you know, not saying they don't have contact with anybody, but, you know, I just want to make sure that I can play out to them so they know that someone cares.
Well, and that's wonderful that you do that, but they also have a great deal to offer us, don't they?
I mean, yeah, definitely. Wisdom, and, you know, they've seen so many things, and it's always great to talk with them, and some people have seen, like, Primrose, and
I know, they've got the
amazing.
Best stories. Yeah, it can actually be some of the most intimidating audiences. Playing at a nursing home, and somebody comes up afterwards and said, "Oh, yeah, I heard Rachmaninoff play that piece."
I'm thinking,
"Oh, my God."
Yeah.
That's intimidating.
Yeah. You know? High fits too.
No, but seriously, I mean, I applaud you for your sensitivity and your communication and the connection that you have, and that it has obviously been a hard fought connection with concentration, with other people with difficulties, and most of all, for our purposes, the music. I mean, it's a great connection that you have, and
we
hope for great things from you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Isabel.
Thank you.
Isabella Markham, 14 years old, from right here in Dallas, Texas.
We're closing today's show with a spellbinding piece by the percussion scholarship group from Chicago, and we've caught their explosive performance on video. You've got to see it to believe it. All that and more on FromTheTop.org.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide at FordFoundation.org. From the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. From the Gruber Family Foundation to extend the breadth and depth of NPR's international coverage. And from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This is NPR.
Welcome back to the radio showcase for the best young classical musicians in the country. From the Top, we're celebrating our 10th anniversary year, this week from the Winspare Opera House at the AT&T Performing Arts Center in Dallas, Texas. Coming up, an amazing composition for percussion ensemble played by 9 teenagers from Chicago. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory's Jordan Hall in Boston, where talented young musicians are creating a new century of musical excellence. Today's program in Dallas is made possible with support from WRR Classical 101.1 FM. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. On stage with me now is a very talented 16-year-old cellist from Shreveport, Louisiana, John Henry Crawford. John Henry, please tell our audience what you and I will be playing together.
We are going to play the third movement, Allegro con moto, of the second cello sonata by Bohuslav Martineau. Thank you.
John Henry Crawford, 16-year-old cellist from Shreveport, Louisiana, playing Martinu. Love doing that piece with you, John Henry.
It's a lot of fun.
Thank you for that. I mean, where did you find this piece? You've actually played this before. You had to teach me this piece.
I've listened to some recordings. Actually, one of my former teachers, Andres Diaz.
Andres is here tonight, yes?
He is. I believe so. Andres.
Thanks a lot, Andres. Hard piano part. Thanks, dude. Seriously, great, great piece, and wonderful that you learned it at such a young age, and really with such confidence and drive and lots of color. This cello you're playing is something you're really connected with, not just from hard work. This is your grandfather's cello, yes?
It was my grandfather's cello. He brought it back from Austria, actually. Escaped Kristallnacht by 7 weeks with it.
So came from Austria, and then he was, what was his name?
Robert Popper. He was a cellist, and we, you know, kind of claim a little relation maybe to David Popper, but we'd rather be, you know, safe in the fact that we think we are than no, we're not. But
so you haven't actually looked into the family tree?
Figure just keep it safe and just pretend.
Just assume.
Right.
And you know, ignorance is bliss.
Exactly.
I think that's fine. I'm perfectly willing to go along with that. I'll say, you know, obviously this is the Popper lineage right here in the Crawford the Crawford genes, and your mom, this is your grandfather on your mom's side. Your grandfather's philosophy is kind of with you on a daily basis. What was his thing?
He always used to say, you know, moderation in everything, keep, you know, balanced. And I'm the kind, you know, OCD, and like will always go and practice, like when someone tells me to practice scales, I'll go practice that forever, and then
ad infinitum.
Exactly.
Not in moderation.
Right. I'm looking for the silver bullet, and I never seem to be able to find it. But now I think it is that it is the moderation, you know.
And now your mom is a musician, of course, you know, from grandfather Popper. She plays cello or violin?
She plays violin. Okay. She's a wonderful violinist.
And she had you started in Suzuki. She had a Suzuki program. She ran a program in Shreveport.
That's
yes?
Correct. I was originally from Shreveport, and she ran a Suzuki program there with 150 students.
Well, and like Sam, you know, having a teacher in the house, was that a good thing? You could, you know, interrupt her and get some advice now and then?
Well, most of the time she's there to listen to me when I want. That's really nice.
Yeah. And your grandfather was there to listen to you on the night he died. How old were you? You played for him.
I was 7 years old. I played Witch's Dance. I was in book 2.
Book 2 of the Suzuki thing. Nicely done, I'm sure. Sure, it was a good last memory, and great that you were able to play for your grandfather. Now, you and your mom are hanging out in Philadelphia these days.
We are. She moved with me to the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia, and so, you know, it's nice to have her there with me, because otherwise I'd be on my own.
Yeah. There's a sound you hear in your apartment in Philadelphia that means a lot to you.
There is. My mom, she also wanted to come with me when I moved, and so she could practice, and because she doesn't get a lot of time to practice, mm-hmm. and so she really is enjoying that aspect of being in Philadelphia, and it's really nice to hear her playing, because, you know, I would go to bed at night and about 10:30, and then she starts practicing when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So now I hear it during the day, and it's just kind of a reminder of home.
Very comforting and wonderful to have her there in Philadelphia in your corner, and. Sounds like you're in a good place in all respects, John Henry. It was really great playing with you.
Thanks. Enjoyed it.
You said great things, too. John Henry Crawford, 16 years old from Shreveport, Louisiana.
Podcasts of From the Top are available every week at fromthetop.org. Over the last 4 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded $1 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. And we still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more.
The percussion scholarship group is epic.
It's a huge time commitment.
It's an emotional roller coaster for me.
I'm a percussionist with the Chicago Lyric Opera, and my wife, Patricia Dash, is a percussionist with the Chicago Symphony. And she had this idea of starting a children's percussion program to give free lessons. The kids would be come from the city of Chicago and would come down to Orchestra Hall, actually in our environment, and learn how to play percussion.
Each kid in the group is allowed to take home a marimba and a snare drum to practice on.
We have a lot of fun, but you have to have self-discipline.
In your first year, the teachers are really, really hard on you and make sure that you take the group really, really seriously.
Let's see, around concert time, like Saturday and Sunday rehearsals can get extra, extra late. And those Sundays rehearsals are really crazy for me because first I have church, then I have to run down to the symphony and practice, then I won't get out until like 10 o'clock at night, then I have math homework and science homework to do for high school, and then I'm grumpy and hungry, and my parents are like, eh, and my sisters are like, ah.
As the program developed and we both started to see where this program could go, We began to bring in other people, other writers, to write us great music, because the kids will really work hard if they love the music. And the arrangements got harder, and the kids got better. And then we started spending more time. Well, if we did this, then we could get them this much better. And over the years, it just keeps growing and growing.
The group to me has been a comfort zone. I moved a lot when I was younger, and I always had music to come back to, and it's always been something constant in my life.
When we're looking for prospective new students, we're not looking for kids who already play percussion. We're not looking for musicians. In fact, almost the opposite. We want to find a student who probably has never played and doesn't read music, then we can bring them along what we believe is the best way and show them how to practice. And when they learn how to practice, they also learn how to study. Their grades go up, they learn how to focus, they learn how to use their time wisely. And those are the kids who are most successful with us.
Everybody has a story about how they almost quit.
In my early years in the group, I really didn't realize the commitment that I had to make to it. I really didn't practice at all as much as I needed to, and it was really, really hard for me to keep it going and practice all I needed to, and I just would get so upset and just be like, Dad, can I please quit the group? But he'd always just say, you know, wait till next year because you might change your mind about it.
I've seen kids in this group go through really big changes while they're here.
I was the most shy person in the universe. And in rehearsal, Mr. Waddell would yell at me all the time, and he would say, play louder, Lucia, play louder, Lucia. And finally, after years of not talking to anybody, always being shy, I just started little by little starting to come into myself and play louder and talk to people.
But of course, the biggest part of the group is music.
When we hit the first note, for me, it's like a shiver goes down my spine. I like really feel like we're all in sync. I can like feel where everyone wants to go, like the motion of the music, how it's gonna flow, like every single thing, especially for this piece, we need to be very in sync. And from the first note, that's what we are. We're like a well-oiled machine.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Chicago, the 9 members of the Percussion Scholarship Group. We heard in that piece the voices of Eric Goldbert, Lucia Leon, Joshua Jones, and one of the group's co-founders, Douglas Waddell. Doug is at the mic for a moment. Doug, welcome. So glad you could be here with us. You said that you offer all of this instruction and training to these kids completely free. So who's paying the bills for this?
Well, in the early years, the Chicago Symphony paid the entire cost for us to exist. And as our group became more marketable, they were able to go out and find foundations and grants and several very generous people.
We've had, thankfully, a whole raft of kids from the Percussion Scholarship Group on this show over the years, but this is the largest ensemble you've sent our way. Doug, tell us what these guys are going to play, first of all.
We're going to play a piece by Minoru Miki called Marimba Spiritual, which originally was orchestrated for 3 percussionists and a marimbist, but our arrangement has vibraphones, xylophones, and all sorts of drums and percussion.
We met Eric, Lucia, and the soloist in this piece, Joshua Jones, but would you please name the other 6 players in the group?
We have John Ringer, Andre Battles, Shuya Gong, Amanda Chow, Zuri Wells, and Marcelina Sahotska.
And this piece is a physical workout as well as a musical one. Describe the choreography for our radio listeners, won't you?
Well, we have all sorts of running and jumping and shouting and crawling and screaming, and it's quite an event.
Sort of taking inspiration from a couple of the sort of Broadway percussion ensembles we've come to know.
Yeah, like a Stomp and a fantastic group called Blast.
Yeah, and from the outfits, we've got sashes and headbands that put me in mind of the great Japanese drumming ensemble Ondeko Za, as well as the incredible concentration and unanimity of this ensemble that I assure our audience this will be an experience you're going to remember the rest of your life. This is a really, really exciting way to end our show today. I want to thank all of our great young performers and thank you all for being with us and listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. Okay, so percussion scholarship group from the Chicago Symphony, you can take it from the top.
Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley for Tom Vagley Productions, with Tim Banker for From the Top. Musical direction by Tom Vinieri with Caroline Cardius Menos. Our tour producer is David Balsam. Our production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette with David Forbes and John Surtees. The executive producers are Gerald Slavin and Jennifer Hurley Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is produced in association with WGBH Boston. Our home and educational partner is New England Conservatory in Boston.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. From the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. And from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org. This is NPR.